connect people, potential, technology.
As a native Californian living in Zurich for 20 years, she is a wife and a mother of two young children and an ice hockey coach for a local hockey school. Jennifer Tam worked globally for multinational companies such as Zurich UBS and Thomson Reuters as a specialist in digital transformation, risk management, and corporate well-being. Jennifer's mission is to create a healthy and high-performing professional environment. As the founder of SESLife, she provides an automated solution for corporate well-being, governance, and regulatory reporting to create an environment for people to feel less stressed, more in balance, connected, and in control of their lives. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Jennifer, I'd like to start the podcast with a question. What was your first exposure into the digital world? Do you remember that?
Oh, good question. Yes, I do remember it. So, and it brings a smile to my face, actually. My first exposure was when I was really little. I was at my cousin's house, and my cousins got Pong, Atari Pong. And I remember my cousins playing Pong, and all the other cousins came, and my siblings all came around. And I just remember my older cousins being so cool playing this game of Pong, and all it was two bars with a little tiny square that was supposed to be a ball going bing, 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 bing. And so that was my first exposure to the digital world. And I thought it was fascinating and super cool. But was the best thing for me is that everyone gathered around the living room and played Pong on the big screen. It was fun.
So it brought people together.
It brought us together, exactly.
And what motivated you to found your own business?
Well, I think a number of things motivated me to found my own business. I come from a long line of entrepreneurs on both sides, and my husband and his father are both entrepreneurs, and so I think it was in my blood. But realistically, I think what it came down to, two things. So one is that I was working for a large multi-global company. I was constantly seeing the ill effects in the organization around people and stress-related incidents. And I had worked now for a few global organizations by this time, and I was thinking to myself, okay, this is a trend. I don't have enough data, so I can't call it a pattern, but I was seeing definitely trends around people issues bleeding into the organization and costing us money. And because I had some relationships with others and with executives and so forth, sometimes I knew about why maybe they were having a stress-related incident, or why they were a bit overworked, feeling overworked, or why they had a bad day. And it might not have had anything to do with the work environment actually at all. It was just completely due to their private life. So I was seeing that. And then, unfortunately, the CFO and CEO of one of my previous companies both committed suicide. And it was at that point that I felt, with the skill sets that I had, with the methodology that we use in the workplace in risk management, non-financial risk management, we should, as professionals, apply that in a way to help manage these people issues and people risks in the corporate environment. So I was trying to see how we could do that as an internal employee. And because you touch upon so many private topics, I thought the only way I could do that is as an external provider with this specialty and expertise. At the time, I was getting my master's, and I did my dissertation and a deep dive on executive level stress, and that launched the beginnings of what it is today as my company, SESLife.
Very good. I also want to ask you, why are things like suicide, for example, still a taboo? They seem to be in taboo in our society. Maybe you can elaborate on that one.
Sure. I'm happy to elaborate a little bit. I think mental health in general is still a taboo, not just the topic of suicide. So why is it taboo? there's probably many different reasons. I'm sure somebody who's an expert in behavioral psychology could probably tell you more specifics around that. But what I've observed in my world is the topic of mental health is taboo because in the work environment, traditionally, we need to show strength, show confidence, and there was always messages of work harder, work hard. You know, are they a hard worker? You know, someone would ask you that about someone else if they wanted to potentially hire them. Are they a hard worker? What do you think about them? Nowadays, you're seeing people talk about working smarter, which is great. So you don't have to work yourself to the bone anymore to be effective. And we also see some improvements on the way of we talking about, you know, focus on the deliverables and the quality of the deliverables as opposed to did they work hard to get it. So mental health, I think, has shaped differently in different organizations. I think now we see a trend, particularly after COVID, where companies are opening up a little bit more about this and addressing that from a perspective of wanting their employees to feel better and to feel like they can perform better and in just a general place entirely around the mental health and physical health perspectives.
So there is improvement and measures being implemented by corporations in, for example, also in the attitude in working smarter and not just working hard.
I do think so, yes. Mm. I think we're in the beginning stages of that. I think we have a lot of opportunity to improve on how we measure and how we expand our way just in general as communities to evaluate holistic health.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other consequences of mental health not being addressed?
Good question. I think the consequences are financial and impactful to communities. And when I say community, I mean big picture community, and that's the people that are in the community. That's the economy, the businesses, the processes around that, the systems, when I say community. So in the EU alone, the estimation costs of stress-related incidents are over $600 billion a year.
$600 billion
a year. And if you take that in comparison to fraud across the EU, fraud is estimated to be over $900 billion. So fraud is estimated to be slightly more expensive, but nonetheless, stress-related incidents are extremely expensive. And so companies are now just realizing this. The numbers are being measured, and we have now the support from larger organizations that are tracking these numbers to place investments in employee and leadership well-being.
Jennifer, can you name other examples of stress-related illnesses?
There's many. It's very difficult. That's a difficult question because you can't always tie one illness or symptom to just stress. There's many different factors in there. There's also positive stress and negative stress. So stress cannot be eliminated, you know, so you want to reduce negative stress as much as possible. But I mean, to give you an example, I mean, something that could come up in your life are headaches. I mean, as simple as that. You could have a stress headache, right? Or you could have something that maybe is longer term, poor relationships, right? So poor relationships in the office or outside the office. And then that combats the stress because then you have more stress, right? Then that would be negative stress.
So it trickles down.
Exactly. So I can't give you all of the examples of what a stress-related incident would be. However, from a cost perspective, from a loss incident perspective in the organization, you know, we talk about burnout or presenteeism and absenteeism, right? So those are better buzzwords now. So
can you maybe explain that?
Sure. Well, absenteeism is exactly that. People are absent from the workplace. They cannot come in because of stress-related illness. Presenteeism is they're there.
But not there,
right? Mm-hmm. So their performance might be not as good as it should be or as high as it should be if they felt in a good place at that particular time.
And how does your solution, Says Life, prevent those situations and helps corporations?
Well, thank you for asking, because the key word you just said is prevention. So as a risk manager, Says Life is designed to help organizations prevent the loss impacts from any stress-related incidents in the workplace. So we need to take a holistic perspective around employees and leadership, create privacy and safety, and have them trust the ability that our organization can provide them. And then you have corporate governance, which is very important now, because to date, there's a lot of well-being organizations out there that do great work. I love them. I support them. They're providing coaching. They're providing, therapy, employee assistance programs, for example. And so what they do is focus on the individual. And as a risk manager, I wanted to see something that was for corporate governance, that was more systemic, that looked at the organization and could say, okay, how do we measure this operationally? How do we measure it financially? How do we structure that so we can focus on prevention and correction? Also, following ISO standards and methodology, that was very important in terms of how we built our automated solutions. And so one of the things that's really great, and I've told you about how this is the beginning of how communities are developing less taboo discussions around mental health. For example, the European Sustainability Reporting Standards now is required for large organizations in the EU and for organizations that do a large enough amount of business in the EU. And so companies are going to be required now to report on what they're doing around the social and governmental factors, which includes health and well-being.
So you have a lot of corporate governance, ISO standards coming in, safety measures and trust-related issues and government regulations coming in addressing these matters.
Exactly. Mm.
So AI is changing the world. How is it changing our professional life in the context of well-being?
Good question. So I think AI is changing the world. There's always new technology that comes into play. Some of it's great, some of it's not so great. I think in terms of well-being, AI, I think it's kind of just the tip of the iceberg. We haven't really expanded AI in the context of well-being as maybe as much as it will be used. I do know from a risk perspective, the risk industry is looking at how do we regulate it? Because, you know, from a well-being perspective, this transformations could pose potentially threats to people's mental health, for example. So if it comes down to, you know, who's using it and why they're using it.
Can you give an example, maybe?
Well, I can tell you the other day, I was just using ChatGPT. I didn't use it very much at all. And then someone recommended, you really need to try it. So I tried it a little bit. And then I realized it was on all day. And it became so good at the end of the day that I started to talk to it, chat to it. And I just thought, gosh, this is the best teammate I've ever had. And then I realized, oh, wait a second. It learned how I liked to be talked to. Mm-hmm. And then I went, whoa, wait a second here. So it's so smart. It knows how to talk to me and so well that I enjoyed it being around all the time. So from a mental health perspective, I thought it was a bit blurry for me personally. So I noted that and I thought, okay, maybe I should be careful about how often I use this tool.
That sounds scary.
It was a little scary, actually.
Now, you as an entrepreneur, I mean, mm-hmm. you experienced the corporate world. You worked for big organization, multinational organizations. Now you're an entrepreneur. Do you think it's harder nowadays or was it harder back in the days to get your business off ground? Or is it maybe easier now with the whole technology that we have available?
Both. So I mentioned I come from a long line of entrepreneurs. And I remember when I graduated university, my grandfather, who started two very successful businesses, one during the Depression, he invited me over to his house and I sat down and he had a little chocolate and a beer for me. He thought that was a nice present after graduation. And he said, Jennifer, you have everything you need to start your own business. It's your head and your hands. And so, and that was his perspective from somebody who started a business during the Depression. And nowadays, if I reflect, is that all you need? Can you use more? Is it easier or harder than what he had to go through? And I think it's both. So easier, I think technology makes certain tasks easier. I think less manual. However, then it's harder also. So there's less human communication. So as an entrepreneur, I think human contact is very important. People knowing who they're working for is very important. And a lot of deals are made because people trust someone versus another. And so in an automated world where you might not have human connectivity as well as maybe they had to rely on, then there's a challenge of creating that sense of trust and building that relationship with people, because this AI-generated marketing cold calls doesn't create that trust.
You have your head and you have your head, your hands. Yeah,
head
I like
hands.
That. I like that, yeah. To conclude the conversation, I would love to ask you also, what is your superpower and which field do you think you are better than other people?
Ooh. Yeah. Well, I always like to say everyone's great. Mm-hmm. Just in our own special way. Okay. We all have our own talents and what we can bring to the table. But my superpower, so I think I'm very comfortable and I love to take big ideas and complex challenges from a very grand perspective and break them down into things very simple and practical and come up with realistic solutions for big ideas and complex situations. I like to avoid over-engineering things because a lot of over-engineering can create, you know, a sense of wow and a black box and, ooh, we should invest in that. And we have no idea what it does because it's so complicated and fancy. However, you know, we don't need to over-engineer sometimes. So I think one of my superpowers is taking big, big, big complex pictures, big ideas, breaking them down and seeing easy, simple, practical, and realistic solutions.
Jennifer Tam, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you.
It was really exciting and I hope, looking forward to the next conversation that we're having.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
People, potential, technology.